Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Last time on The Fan of History, we talked about the 970s BC. We talked about how King Zhao of China dies. Mu becomes the king of Zhu. What happens in the 960s, Dan?
Well, in 969 BC, Pharaoh Tsamen of Egypt breaks tradition. And or his people does, because a new word appears. A word gets a new meaning. It's the word Pharaoh. It's now being used to refer to the king of Egypt. And this has not happened before, because Pharaoh literally means great house, and it used to refer to the palace or the office of the king, but not to the person of the king. So there is no reference to an earlier pharaoh as the pharaoh, but now they are everywhere. So Pharaoh Shoshenq I, Pharaoh Osorkon I, etc., these are upcoming pharaohs, are commonplace. But Tsamen is the first person who is called the Pharaoh of Egypt.
Okay, so this is the first time in 969, is the first time it's actually been referred to as he is the Pharaoh, not he's in the Pharaoh position.
Yes.
Would be the distinction.
Yes, the nation has been around for 2,000 years, but this has not happened before.
That's really interesting. I'm always a big fan of new words.
Yeah, and it really survived. So it was apparently a good usage of the word. And there is definitely a difference between being the pharaoh and being the king of somewhere. In the before the Bronze Age collapse, in the New Kingdom, for example, every other king in the Near East referred to each other as brothers, but the pharaoh was never a brother to anyone. He was the pharaoh. He was above. He was a god king. And nobody else was. Not the king of Babylon, not the king of Assyria, etc. Oh, apparently he wasn't the pharaoh, but he was a god king. I'll skip three areas today. It's Europe, India, and the Olmecs of Mexico, because there is nothing to add. But next time, there is. So I'll skip right on to 967 BC, when Assur-resi Issi II, the king of Assyria, dies. Probably old age then. We mentioned he was probably old when he succeeded last time, and now he's gone. So it didn't make a great impression on the long line of Assyrian kings. But his son, Tiglath-Pileser II, becomes the king. And this is a great king's name. Tiglath-Pileser I, Tiglath-Pileser III are among the greatest kings of Assyria. And I did this guy injustice on the YouTube show, because I actually found something about him that we'll talk about in a later show, because Tiglath-Pileser II will be around until 935 BC. But in this decade, he's still worried about keeping Assyria's borders safe from roaming Arameans and other marauders close to Assyria. But there is now only 50 years left until Assyria will rise again.
And actually, if you go on YouTube right now, there's a tribute video to what happened there.
Yes, there is. In 967 BC, our buddy Pharaoh Siamun finally dies. And his mummy has never been found. And at this point, they found a lot of mummies. Most of them are in the British Museum in London. There has been two unknown mummies found in Susenes I's tomb. Susenes I was the greatest king of the 21st dynasty, the dynasty we're in right now. He ruled right before we started our show. I think he died in 1004. And one of these mummies is suspected to be Siamun. Siamun ruled Egypt from 986 to 967 BC, and he was one of the stronger pharaohs of the 21st dynasty. But we still have this situation where Egypt is divided because the high priest of Amun in Thebes is ruling southern Egypt, but not calling himself pharaoh, but he has the power of the king in southern Egypt. But it seems to be something that the kings in Tanis in the north are okay with. But now something strange happened. Because a new king comes to power and he is called Susenes II. But remember, the high priest of Amun we talked about last time is called Susenes III. And he's not mentioned anymore. So there is a suspicion that this is the same person. That the high priest of Amun actually becomes the pharaoh of all of Egypt and reunites Egypt at this point. And that would explain why the 22nd dynasty that we will soon meet has such an easy time reuniting Egypt. Because Egypt has been divided now for 150 plus years. Sad for us that Susenes II and Susenes III and are both mystery persons. We don't have a lot of sources about them, and actually we had a lot more written from the Egyptians themselves about Siamun, and we have a great lot more written about the next pharaoh after Susenes II, who is called Shoshenq. But Susenes II will be around for 20 years. I can include a link in the show notes to the family tree of the 21st and 22nd dynasty, and it makes the Julio-Claudian dynasty tree of Rome look simple, because it's extremely complicated. So we actually know a lot of persons close to the pharaohs, like their wives and their children, etc. I'd like to make a small comment here about the reality of the pharaohs compared to our other sources from this time. Egypt is so good source-wise, because we can read the hieroglyphs and we can actually see what these guys wrote in their time. So it's primary sources from that are current to the age, and that's a luxury we don't get anywhere else in the 960s BC. But soon we'll get it from Assyria as well, and that will change the amount of content we have in a show.
Okay, so I just wanted to ask a question about the reality of this information. So I would venture to say that the information that we get from people at that time is probably the most accurate, as well as it kind of gives us a perspective of how they felt at that time, which is something that's really hard to pass down, you know, verbally or even through archaeology. Isn't that something that's very hard to pass down or to learn from archaeology?
Very hard. Also, what we have from Egypt is a lot of, not maybe from the 960s BC, but earlier, we have a lot of lower ranked people writing that we have preserved. There is a lot of, not poor people, but people who are not kings and generals and high priests. Their writing has actually come down to us as well, so we know a bit about how common people feel. There is a famous inscription about who is brewing the beer for the pyramid builders. For example, they are not building pyramids, they're building tombs in the Valley of the Kings. But it's like, okay, this, they have like 10 days, and they work 9 days, and then they get a day off, and then somebody is assigned to, you are brewing the beer, so you get an extra day off because you have to brew the beer for the day that everybody else got off. So I don't know what quality of beer they got in one day, but that's kind of the inscriptions we get from Egypt. So okay. The sources there are great.
Okay.
In 965 BC, or in 966 BC, sorry, King Mu, the great King Mu of the Zhou dynasty, he receives news that the Dog people has become very powerful and they are on Zhou China's border. These are the Quan Rong. They are part of Zhou China, early Zhou China, the Western Zhou that we talk about now. They have defined four groups of barbarians, but they are much like the Greeks will be. They're like, these guys are barbarians, they don't talk Chinese, they are weird, so they don't give us good information. But the Dog people, they talk about at this time, because the Dog people has become a big threat, but they are not invading China. So King Mu, who is more ambitious than wise, he wants to fight the Dog people before they invade China. And his main advisor, the Duke of Sai, tells him that's a really bad idea, my king. But King Mu says, I'm going to do it anyway. So he marches the heavenly armies into the Dog people's territory. And as the Dog people, who are quite powerful, they are surprised. And they get beat by King Mu, who wins a glorious victory. And the booty he brings back from this campaign is pretty strange. So there are some later sources that claim that this must have been a failure because the booty was so strange. Because from the campaign, King Mu brings back 5 kings of the Dog people. That's a pretty good booty. 5 deer and 5 dogs. But they were the Dog people, and they claimed to be descendant from dogs. And other sources claim that these dogs were sacred to the Dog people. So he actually took their kings and their sacred dogs to show that he really crushed the Dog people. And they are not happy about this. They withdraw and they plot their revenge against China.
And I have a question about the exotic animals. Is a deer in China, is that considered exotic at the time, or is it kind of...
No, not at all, but these deer were, and I can't remember in what sense they were, but they were not random deer. They might have been a rare breed or some special religious deer.
Okay.
So we see a bit of what King Mu is like here. He's like, I'm gonna do what I'm gonna do, haha. And that's all the events we have from the 960s BC. This is the Dark Age. And we have very, very few sources.
Next time on The Fan of History, we're going to talk about the 950s BC. We're going to talk about what happens in Egypt, Tiglath-Pileser II, the king of Assyria, and Kuru in India. As well as we're going to have some more information on the Olmecs and what happens to the Olmecs in modern-day Mexico.
Yeah, and we're going to talk about the legends of King Mu, the later stuff that the Zhou dynasty at its weak point, maybe 500 years later, will invent a lot of things about King Mu, making him a great hero of Chinese tradition. but this time we can talk a bit about our YouTube channel and tell people what they can find there. So, what do we have on the YouTube channel?
Well, on the YouTube... Do you want to just use the pre-recorded thing?
I think we should go into more depth here to fill this episode out.
Okay.
Because it's so short.
Oh, yeah, it is short. Okay. Well, on the YouTube channel, we post weekly videos starting at 1000 BC. We're 100 years ahead of the podcast, so you can go ahead and check those out and get ahead, see what happens. And we do add extra content to the podcast because we don't have the video, and we spend more time talking about videos and showing maps that we don't do on the podcast, so you get a lot more information here. Go ahead and watch the YouTube channel. You get a lot of extra video and different information than you get here. So... check out the YouTube channel. You can get ahead there or tune in next week.
Sometimes I get crazy inspired as well and do bonus shows on YouTube. So there is one about laws in the 10th century BC. So if you want to know how the legal system worked in some countries. You can check that out. There is a video about the history of Assyria before our show, so 3000 to 1000 BC in Assyria. There is a video about the ancient line of Assyrian kings and exactly how long this family has stayed in power in Assyria.
And there's also a video on Ashurnasirpal II and his conquests. If you'd like to talk to us and be part of the conversation, you can message us on Facebook at facebook.com/fanofhistory, or you can go to our website where we have all of our content, including our YouTube videos and all of our podcasts, including bonus videos, at thefanofhistory.wordpress.com, or you can go to twitter.com/thefanofhistory.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.